Circuit is now in session. All persons having business before this honorable court may now draw near and they will be heard. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Very well. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for appearing by video conference for this argument session. Madam Clerk, would you please call the case for argument?
20-1616 from the Southern District of Iowa, United States versus Bert Banstra.
Very well. Mr. McCarthy, we'll hear from you first.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court. Good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Tim McCarthy. I practice law in West Des Moines, Iowa, and I have the opportunity to represent Bert Banstra on this appeal. I was actually his trial court attorney back in October 2019. Mr. Banstra was elected to go to trial. It was a short trial. It was a day and three quarters long, and he ultimately got convicted of the only count he was involved with, which was conspiracy to distribute methamphetamine in excess of 500 grams. He was sentenced to 190 months sometime later. The district court found the base offense level to be 34, gave him a two-point increase for a firearm, 36, crime history 2, guideline range was 210 to 262, and the court ultimately gave him a sentence of 190. He had three co-defendants, Amber Jo Bonewitz, Troy Clark, and Christian Zimmerman. Bonewitz was sentenced before Banstra. She received 150 months. Zimmerman was sentenced after. He received 121 months. How this organization worked, Your Honors, is Clark was pretty much the main guy. Bonewitz and Zimmerman bought meth from him, and we're talking large quantities, kilos, pound quantities. And then Mr. Banstra would purchase ounce quantities once a week from both Bonewitz and Zimmerman. And when the feds, the law enforcement were following up on Bonewitz and Zimmerman, they got Mr. Banstra in their sights and issued a search warrant and so forth. The first issue I'd like to address is the firearm enhancement. This was not a 924C case. We had an agreement that there was not going to be any mention of the gun during the course of the trial. And there's some reasons for that. So I agreed to it because it was in our best interest not to mention the gun. So no evidence came in whatsoever. Zero evidence came in at trial concerning the weapon. At sentencing, the prosecutor introduced two photos of a weapon purportedly to be Mr. Banstra's. It was in his bedroom. But then again, there was no sentencing. There's no evidence at either the trial or at the sentencing procedure, just a photograph. We had no opportunity to cross any law enforcement, to confront the government or witnesses, just two photos. And to find that that gun was somehow connected to the drug activity is a huge guess. Where was it found? Was it moved? Who found it? All those things were not answered. And for it to tie the gun in and give him a two-point enhancement, I think was an error without any evidence whatsoever. There wasn't even a proffer from the assistant U.S. attorney on it, just two photos. And that ties into the safety valve argument, because once he was given a two-point enhancement for the firearm, he wasn't eligible. So I couldn't even ask for that at that point. To answer the question, I'm going to propose a question, really, how was the gun connected? And to answer that question, based on the record in this case, you have to guess. You got to make some presumptions that aren't based in fact or evidence. And I don't think that's what the law calls for. We don't even know where the gun was found. We don't know when it was found, who found it. Was it moved before these pictures were taken, or was it moved afterwards? I don't know. But we're asking that that two-point enhancement be reversed.
When you say two-point, Mr. McCarthy, just to be precise on the terminology, you're talking in terms of points. Criminal history score is determined based on points. But I think what you mean is a two-level increase in his offense level. Is that the dispute here?
That is correct, Your Honor, from 34 to 36, yes.
Okay, so we're talking levels, not points, is my thought.
Yeah, you're correct. I misspoke.
All right. Very well, you may proceed.
Thank you. Concerning the minor participant issue under 3B1.2B of the guidelines, It's our position that Banster was substantially less culpable than Zimmerman and Bonewits. Zimmerman had six controlled buys conducted on him. Six. He was buying and selling pounds and kilos all over north central Iowa. Bonewits was also buying and selling pounds and kilos of methamphetamine. Banster, on the other hand, received 1 ounce per week, which he sold part of, to feed his habit and his addiction and pay for the drugs. You know, he gets an ounce, he sells half of it, recoups the profit, and the drugs are free for him. It's a sad state of events, but that's what happened here. Banster was an admitted customer of Zimmerman and Bonewits. He had nothing to do. He never met Troy Clark. He never, no idea where they got it from, how they got it, what they paid for it. They just delivered him an ounce every week. And he turned around and sold part of it and did the rest. The PSI and the prosecutors both will admit that Banster had no leadership role whatsoever and also was just a mere customer of Bonewits and Banster. If you look at the PSR, and I mentioned this in my brief, Amber Jo Bonewits' name is mentioned 102 times, Zimmerman 71, Clark 65, and Banster 27. That's how many times he's mentioned. And you have to also realize this was a six-count indictment, and he was only charged in count one. That leads me to what would be the third issue on this appeal, and that's what I've termed the trial penalty. Bonewits pled to count one. She received a sentence of 150 months, 40 months less than Mr. Banster. Even though while she was on release, she was found to have drugs in her person, smuggling into the Polk County Jail. She also had an issue with a gun that the prosecutor used the term, I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt and not pursue that. Zimmerman, who was moving kilos, pled guilty after Banster was found guilty, and he received a sentence of 121. That's going back to what Burt Banster got, he got 190. And we have the same district court judge in all the cases, so the court is ultimately familiar with this case. I guess what it really comes down to is doing criminal defense work in both state and federal court. At some point, especially in federal court, you have a it's called the talk with your client. And the talk is you bring your client in, say, okay, here's the plea agreement. You do the guideline calculations. You say this is what you're looking at on a plea agreement. Maybe it's 11A1C, maybe not. But you talk to him about what advantages there are to taking a plea. And you always say, well, what if we go to trial? And the common answer for me and my colleagues is if you go to trial and win, great. If you go to trial and lose, you're going to get hammered. And that's what happened here. The sentence is, 150, 121, up to 190, are not in line. And you shouldn't be punished because you go to trial. That's my bottom line. It's a constitutional right. And I know we all know you lose your 3 points for acceptance, and you probably get hit with obstruction if you testify and lose. But it should be in line with the rest of them. With that, I'm going to yield the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Very well, you may. Thank you for your... I need just one moment here. All right, very well. Mr. Call, we'll hear from you.
May it please the court, Mr. McCarthy, I will address the three sentencing issues as well, starting with the gun enhancement. There is evidence as to the location of the gun, starting with paragraph 33 of the pre-sentence report, where the paragraph the defendant admitted to that the loaded Ruger 357 revolver was located in his bedroom together with several other items relating to the drug distribution, including currency, baggies, methamphetamine residue, digital scales, and packaging materials. photograph was offered is a series, sentencing exhibit three is a series of three photographs. The photograph, first photograph is the photograph of how the firearm was observed at the time of the search warrant in a case underneath an end table. And then the second and third photographs are essentially staged photographs showing the firearm in more detail.
Who laid the foundation for the photographs so that we would be able to confirm what you just said about what's shown in each photograph?
The photograph was simply offered without objection at the sentencing hearing, but as the trial judge pointed out, she can compare the first photograph in that series to the photographs in the trial exhibits. I would point the court to trial exhibits 9, 12, and 18, where wider views of that same end table appear. The end table that has the digital scales on it, it has a tin containing some currency right next to it. So it was based on the trial record, this photograph clearly was the firearm in its case on this end table next to Mr. Bannister's bed. In any case, there's no objection to the allegation that it was contained in his bedroom. At the law and the temporal and spatial relationship between the defendant, the criminal activity, and the firearm, we find that it is not clearly improbable that the firearm had nothing to do with the offense. It's a tool of the drug trafficking trade. That's something this court has mentioned in the Anderson case, for example, and other cases as well. This is not an unloaded hunting rifle in a closet. This is a loaded handgun contained near other indicia of drug trafficking. It was a firearm that the defendant had in that residence during the course of the drug distribution with respect to his activities with Ms. Bonowitz and Mr. Zimmerman, as well as with his own customers. Regarding the role adjustment, Mr. McCarthy's argument, or the extension of the argument, is there would almost always be a role reduction if there's an upstream supplier of some sort, and that simply is not the law. We cite the Cubillo case at page 9 of our brief as an example. The defendant was deeply involved in the offense. He had his own customer base. He had his own customer base where he set the prices, he collected the money, he dealt with his customers independently of Zimmerman and Bonowitz. So for those reasons, the enhancement or the minor participant reduction would not apply. And if anything, I would suggest that he risked a role enhancement because, as the district court mentioned, he used his girlfriend, Stacy Johnson, to receive money on his behalf to provide information, transmit information between customers and himself, and between Bonowitz and Zimmerman and himself. So not only is he not getting him, this court properly not give him minimal participant reduction, but frankly, he probably got a little bit of a break by not getting a role enhancement. As to the sentencing disparities, and I'll focus in particular on the argument made in the brief with respect to the disparity between Ms. Bonowitz and Mr. Banstra. Ms. Bonowitz was held accountable for the same range of drug quantity as was Mr. Banstra. She did not get a firearm enhancement, and she was denied acceptance responsibility for smuggling methamphetamine into the Polk County Jail. She was at the same criminal history category. She received a similar variance in terms of percentage. The difference between Ms. Bonowitz and Mr. Banstra comes down to the firearm. The firearm, Mr. McCarthy mentioned the firearm that had initially been attributed to Ms. Bonowitz in her pre-sentence report. That was a firearm that was found at a search warrant of Mr. Clark's residence where Ms. Bonowitz was present. Entirely different circumstances. It was under a pile of clothes. There was an initial suggestion that she might be tagged with the gun, but the facts just didn't bear that out, and that's discussed in paragraphs 41 through 44 generally of Mr. Banstra's pre-sentence report, the circumstances involving that gun. Moreover, this court and Fry and Pierre, for example, as cited at page 12 of our brief, has made clear that we're really not supposed to be doing comparisons between individual defendants or co-defendants in a conspiracy case, but rather looking to national disparities. There is no showing of that sort of disparity here. Focusing again on Mr. Banstra's sentence, he received a sentence below the guideline range. A guideline sentence would have been presumed reasonable on appeal. There is no procedural error. There is no abuse of discretion by the court. Unless this court has further questions, I would be content to rely on the brief for the remainder of the arguments.
I was struck by Mr. McCarthy's brief and opening argument. One almost gets the impression that he characterized his client as, like they say in the movie industry, playing only had a bit role or a cameo role, and you have him on being involved hip and thigh in the whole distribution system. To where does the truth lie? To what extent did he participate in the overall distribution of the other defendants?
He was a distributor of methamphetamine that was provided by Bonowitz and Zimmerman. Mm-hmm. And of course their source was Clark. They were certainly pound quantity dealers. He was an ounce level dealer. There certainly is a distinction about the quantities that were being dealt. On the other hand, he was distributing this in, as the district court noted at sentencing, I believe, in small rural communities where this stuff has a particularly pernicious effect. He was in possession of a firearm while he's engaged in this drug trafficking activity. Over time, he moved a substantial amount of methamphetamine. That's that, along with the way the guideline worked, put him at that level 34. That was not objected to in the pre-sentence report process.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, we'd ask that the sentence be affirmed.
Very well. Thank you for your argument. Mr. McCarthy, we'll hear from you in rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge. The court asked about the foundations for the photographs. There were none. There was no evidence put on. I wasn't afforded an opportunity to cross-examine anybody or confront the witnesses that led to this increase. So there was no foundation. No foundation.
What about the idea that the judge could see that the photo showed the same area that was shown in the trial exhibits? I think that was the answer given.
But the question is, when were those photos taken and what was placed where? I don't know. That's a guess. To put it a little bit in perspective, when Amber Jo Bonowitz came in for sentencing with the same criminal history and the same base level, they recommended a sentence of 168 months for her. She got 150. And then when my client appears, Mr. Banstra, they recommended 210, the low end of the guidelines for him. So there's just a huge discrepancy there. And again, he was doing 1 ounce a week, and she was doing pounds and kilos. So you got to believe that they're angry at him for going to trial. And it wasn't that onerous of a trial. It was a day and a half, day and three quarters. So with that, Your Honors, I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you, and I'll rely on the appellant's first brief and the reply brief as written. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you both for your arguments. The case is submitted. The court will file an opinion in due course. That concludes the argument session for this afternoon, so the court will be in recess until further call of the docket. Good
afternoon, everybody.